music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're happy to have back on the show a very talented Montreal artist who is not only a powerful vocalist, but also an amazing DJ. Sandy Duperval drops by to chat about her new single, All Night, and what it's like being a female DJ in a crowd of men. Up next is indie rock band Towers and Trees from British Columbia. They have a new single called Free, and their sophomore album, West Coast, is ready to rock. We wrap things up with folk artist Beth Moore, who has recently released her sophomore album, 5 out of 10, and explains the challenges and triumphs of being an indie artist. This next artist wears many hats. She's not only a stellar vocalist, but a DJ and producer. Sandy Duperval began singing at the age of 3, signed her first record deal at 14, and trained with the one and only Sissy Houston, Whitney's mom. Sandy, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi.
So I wanted to talk to you about your sort of beginnings in the entertainment industry. Did you know, like, fairly early on that that's where you were headed? I know you started in music early, but did you sort of know that this is where your life lay?
I knew this is what I wanted to do. At first, I also wanted to be a pediatrician. And I remember not understanding what came with the task. But then my grandmother said, you know what? You are talented and I believe in you. So she supported me so much that it just came naturally. I just went into music. I just kept going no matter what. And I'm happy I made that choice.
How did working with Whitney Houston's mother, Sissy Houston, actually come about?
I was signed to a record label in New Jersey, which was owned by Whitney's stylist, Diane Johnson. And I was going back and forth when I was about 14 years old. And at some point, when we were recording a few songs, they wanted to get me a coach, and since they're very close to the Houston family, I was offered the opportunity of working with Sissy.
How did you go from working on music, like being a vocalist, and then moving over to being a DJ? Because that's also a very important part of your career.
Yes, well, that was a bit of an accident. I was looking for a job that was related to music while I was studying in Sherbrooke City. And my mom introduced me to a club owner, which also he happens to be a DJ. And he offered to show me how to mix. And I would open up for his nights. And I started spinning for $8 an hour. And I was also mentored by one of the best DJs in Quebec. So this, I was not expecting it to get to that level. But from the moment I started spinning, it just felt like, okay, maybe this is something that I can grow into. And 12 years later, I'm just like still doing it and getting better at it. I'm really thrilled that these are things that I look back, like, never expecting that they would get that far. And it's been a blessing.
How long have you actually been? I know you said 12 years now, you know, you've been a DJ, but do you find that in these 12 years, it's changed for women? Like, is it getting a bit more easy to have respect as a DJ, or have the boys always treated you well?
I've always been very lucky, but I have to say that from the moment I started, I didn't have a lot of people to look up to, especially that most female DJs were underground DJs or house music DJs. And at that point, I had no knowledge, or I didn't know the scene. So it was hard to find other DJs to share music with, or to speak about it, or, you know, to see where we could bring the female DJ scene to. But along the way, I've been able to meet up with some other DJs. And I remember the first DJ I would go out to listen to was Pascal McCoy in The Village. And she was the only DJ who had an open format kind of set. And from that moment, that really inspired me to, like, not close off my options, as opposed to, like, being just a female house DJ, just play what music, what the people want to hear and what makes them dance. So that was very inspiring. But I find that comparing to today, today there's a whole lot of amazing female DJs to look up to. And a lot of female DJs are doing what you know, guys do just as good. So I think a lot of the limits were broken through the years. And I find that it's great.
Can you give us an idea of exactly the time commitment that it takes to be DJ and the fact that it is difficult? Because I think a lot of people think, oh, you just get up there and like throw on a song. And I know that you don't. But can you give us an idea about what it's like to sort of know what, you know, a gig you're doing and how to read the crowd and just all that sort of stuff?
Well, you know, as much as it may be accessible and it seems easy, it takes work. It's like you have to study the music that you spin. You have to live the music you spin in order to deliver it to people. You have to know what's the trend, what's coming up, and also know the history of the music you spin, because this is how you can tell the story. I spend about 20 hours at least just doing musical research, and then a whole lot of my music is being tested as I spin, as opposed to, you know, you don't spend as much time just practicing at home as much as you need to try to get a few gigs where you can practice reading the crowd, because you can own all the music in the world. If you don't understand how to deliver it to people and how people can react to it, then, you know, you won't be a good DJ. You'll be you'll be able to spin the music, but to create a 5-hour set with history and leave people like with something to remember, that is all in the research you do and all the understanding where the music comes from, the producers that make those music, and follow through with, if you're a house DJ, follow what's going on in the house scene and live it. So I think it's a lot about making DJ a part of your life as opposed to a job, you know.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is DJ and vocalist Sandy Duperval. Make sure to check out her website, sandyduperval.com. Now, you have a brand new single and video out called All Night. Is this music, or this new single, is it a departure for you musically? Because I know that, again, you know, a lot of your history is in the house scene, and it sounds like a different eclectic mix.
Yeah, well, I was a gospel singer for the most, like, first 18 years of my life. I studied jazz music, and then I discovered house music later on. And what I like about house music is how it picks up from a lot of different styles. And originally coming from disco, it's very funky. It's very, like, I like vocal house and anything that has a bit of a groove and a melody. So when I did All Night, it wasn't too far away from house music for me, because it was groovy, because it brought a little bit of a you know, the freedom of it. I like the fact that when I first did the lead, the first 10 seconds of the song, it stayed in my head, so I knew I had to develop around that. And also, it shows everything that really makes me. I'm not just a house DJ, I'm just a music lover. All the influences of, like, the funkiness, the warmth, are things that define the music that I want to produce and the music that I want to perform. So All Night was just, as a first song to represent me, I think it was just perfect.
Now, you produced the song, you also mixed it. How important, you know, was it for you to be involved in every aspect of the song's creation?
I think it's a control thing. Maybe I'm a bit of a control freak. I you know, like, I do work with a lot of amazing people. When I was mixing this specific song, I think I did about 20 different mixes. And we ended up picking up the first mix I did. The thing is, you know, when you first start a mix, you're originally not as picky. You just go with, oh, okay, this is how I feel. I want the drums, the kick drum to be this fat, or I want, you know, like the snare to be a little more front. And so the first mix I did, I was free in it. So when I did all these other ones, I had changed so many things that I lost that essence. So I went back and picked that first one. Everyone else who heard the first one was like, no, this mix is the one. Because there's no bad, or, you know, it's all about, from the production view, what you want people to pick from the song. So everything was exactly where it needed to be. The vocals were, I had Kim Richardson do the back vocals, And her voice was so perfect, dead on, that I just didn't want to touch it on the mix. I needed it to stand out. And, you know, all these elements, the guitar, the way I wanted it to be a little more on the right. So on the first mix, it was just exactly how I felt it. So we kept that one.
Now that the single is actually out, are there plans to release an album? Because I know, like, nowadays, a lot of people view this as a singles market.
I know it is a singles market, but for me and the people who've been waiting for the album for so long, it's really important. I think for me, the single was a bit of a teaser because originally I wanted to release the album. But because the timing is really good right now, I was like, okay, well, let's release the single, but we're planning on releasing the full album in the fall. So I'm hoping it works out. The album is ready. It's important to me to release the album as opposed to just release continuous like singles, because I have a story to tell. This album is it's like my personal journal, and I want people to know where I come from, what's happened, and why I'm doing those things I'm doing. The artist needs to be to come out, and this album is everything.
You also released simultaneously with the single coming out, the video for the song. In your mind, how important is a video these days to support the music? Is it still as important as it was in the 90s and early 2000s?
I think it is. Of course, we don't have the same budgets, and we have an incredible platform, which is the internet. So why not use it for people to not only listen, but to see and to capture every sense of people? I find that the video is... it allows people to get a little more intimate with the artist as opposed to having to imagine what the song represents. They can see the artist, get a feeling. I usually get interested in songs when I see the videos, because now I can understand the song from the artist's point of view.
Now, I know this is a tough question, but do you prefer or can you even separate your preference between DJing and being like a vocalist, being an artist on stage?
On stage, I want to do both. This for sure, if you ever see me perform, you'll see a little bit of DJing, because the DJ part came along with, I love having musicians, but having my having full control over what I'm spinning and not really, I never have like a dead-on set prepared. Like, I don't go to a gig knowing what I'm going to spin. I like to be surprised. I like to go along with the flow. So spinning and singing at the same time and seeing how far I could get and how open-minded people are is what makes me excited before a gig. So for sure, you'll see me do both on stage.
And where do you want to be, you know, in the next like 6 months to a year? Like, I know that you said the album's coming out, and I know you've worked so hard over your career to get where you're going. So where are you going? Where is Sandy Duperval headed?
It's time for me to share my story and make a difference in people's lives. So I'm hoping to be on the road. I'm hoping to be doing more production for other people. And, you know, I just want to know that every day I wake up, I'm doing something I'm passionate about.
Fantastic. Sandy, thank you so much for your time. You've been great, and we wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's DJ and vocalist Sandy Duperval. Again, make sure to check out her website, sandyduperval.com.
Hi, this is Sandy Duperval. You're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Trying
the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Twitter at @KAlexanderShow.
We're looking forward to learning all about our next guest and his band Towers and Trees, an indie rock band that hails from Victoria, British Columbia. They've released a new single called Free, and their sophomore album is ready to rock. Adrian Chalifour, lead vocalist and songwriter of Towers and Trees, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Very happy to have you on the show. And my first question, you know, I always like to know is, how did music become such an important part of your life?
Yeah, well, I think, I've always been a musical person. I was a kid, plinking away on the pots and pans in my parents' kitchen. And they sort of tried to channel that into piano lessons when I was a child, and that didn't really stick. It wasn't until I was 13 and I picked up a guitar, and actually it's because my older brother, I saw he started learning guitar. And so then I think there's the thing that younger brothers do or younger siblings do where they get jealous or envious and they want to do what their older sibling is doing. And I picked up a guitar and started playing, and that's when it really stuck. And so actually throughout my teen years and those sort of developmental years, it was really, I learned to play music in the church where my family went. And then I started sort of playing around with songwriting in my later teens. And I didn't play my first show kind of out in the public until I was 19. But it just, it felt really good. I really enjoyed the process of creating and sharing. And that's really what Towers and Trees is all about, actually. There was a period in my 20s where I got quite disillusioned with that, trying to make things move and trying to make things happen in music. And I was really kind of fixated on the results and kind of the tangible success or lack thereof. So it wasn't until I started Towers and Trees that really the purpose of Towers and Trees was to try and get away from all of that and get away from trying to have an impact and just get back to making music simply for the joy of creating and sharing it. And that's somehow that has really stuck and resonated. And then kind of ironically or counterintuitively, this project has now taken me further with music than anything previous that I've done.
Can you tell us how the band actually came together and why the name Towers and Trees?
Well, so like I said, there was this period it's going back like about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, where I kind of dropped music entirely. I'm from Victoria, B.C. I'd actually always planned on leaving Victoria, B.C. as soon as I finished university because I wanted to go play music. And actually, my dream was to finish university in Victoria and go to Montreal because that's where all the best bands were coming out of it. And I just want to go and I want to play music. And I didn't end up doing that. In fact, I ended up doing kind of the opposite. I moved to like quite a small town in the interior of BC. And in that process, kind of like let that dream go and just became very disillusioned with playing music. And so I then moved around a bit for the next few years and I really lost a sense of belonging. And so when I came back to Victoria, after it was like 3 years later, I ended up back in Victoria. I no longer had a sense of like kind of where I belonged or what my home was. And I didn't even know really where I was trying to get to. And so the name Towers and Trees, what I liked about it is I think it just reminds me of home. It just sounds like home to me. Being from the West Coast, there's always a part of me that loves to get back to nature. But at the same time, you know, particularly being a musician, there's something about a vibrant scene that you know, there's something about the city that really appeals to me. So Towers and Trees just felt very familiar and home-like to me. So when it started, it was actually kind of like, almost a solo project. It was myself and my friend Ben, who's also involved in the project. He came on to produce this living room recording project where he just said, we should record some of your songs. I really like them. And so we started doing that. And we just used equipment that we owned between the two of us. And so we started recording guitar and vocals. We're like, man, this is actually sounding really good. We should see if we can get some electric guitar on this. And we're like, okay, who do we know? And so he knew this guy, Dave, who used to play in the band. Like, well, let's give him a call, see if he wants to come in. Okay, so he came in for an afternoon and laid down all the electrics for that album. And then so it would be really great to get bass in. Who do we know? We just kept doing that for each instrument. We pulled people in kind of one by one and layer picked this thing together. And by the end of it, we had our first record, which is called Broken Record. And it was sounding really good. We were all really happy with it. And so we said, we should have a show. And so we did this CD release show in our hometown at Canoe Brew Pub and sold 200 tickets and sold the place out. And I think that first time that we played all the songs live together on stage before this, what felt like a very big audience to us at the time, that's when it suddenly resonated that, wow, this actually feels really good. Like there's something to this Towers and Trees thing. And that's sort of when that's when it kind of formally evolved from this like sort of solo living room project. This is what I sort of call an exercise. I always called it was like an exercise in redemption for myself, to this more collaborative kind of collective that really came alive on stage. So.
Joining us on the show is Adrian, lead vocalist of Towers and Trees. Make sure to check out their website, towersandtreesmusic.com. Now, if I've done my homework correctly, Adrian, I read that you're the sort of the sole songwriter for the band. Is that a lot of pressure, or do you actually enjoy having the lyrical content directly on your shoulders?
I think probably it depends on what day of the week it is. Whether that feels like pressure or something that I can embrace. No, like I said, I mean, I'm someone who is very prone, I think, to feeling pressure. I think that's why I kind of had that period in my life where it just came too much and I kind of threw in the towel and said, I don't even want to think that I am a musician anymore. But the thing about Towers and Trees, like I said, when we started it sort of had this vision statement that I wrote out and I shared with everybody. And it said, our vision is to create, our vision is to find the joy in creating and sharing great music. And so for myself as a songwriter as well, I think anytime I'm feeling the pressure, I just come back to that vision statement. And I say, this isn't about having to do anything. This isn't about having to achieve anything. This is simply about sharing what's already in you to give, which is an important thing, I think, especially for myself as a songwriter. I think for a lot of songwriters, there are days when you're trying to create something and you feel like you're just pushing against a wall. And I think that I heard a really great analogy. I think it was Paul McCartney, but I can't remember. Somebody said that songwriting is sort of like fishing. You can't choose when you hook a big fish. All you can choose is how often you go down to the pond and how often you cast your line in. And that's sort of how I view songwriting. I try and make sure that I'm giving myself, creating time for myself to be creative and write those songs. But then on some of you just have to trust that, you know, whatever it is you're going to channel or catch or whatever's going to happen to create that song, it's going to happen because it's in you. And you sort of have to just trust yourself and trust the ethereal whatever, wherever those songs come from.
So we have to talk about your song Montreal, seeing as how I am from the city and our show is based out of here. I have to ask you, like, I know you mentioned off the top sort of your affection for Montreal. Is that why you wrote the tune?
Yes, I actually, yeah, that's a great question. I wrote Montreal about a year after I didn't move to Montreal. And actually, so when I wrote that song, which is very much a celebration of the city and sort of what I sort of saw as like the heart of that city, to me, it was actually sort of a swan song for that dream of mine and letting it die. So when I wrote Montreal, I was about as far from Montreal as it could possibly be. I was very frustrated, very pent up, very miserable. And I thought, you know what, before I just let this thing die and give up on ever going to Montreal and playing music, I need to at least write a song about it. And so that's what I did. And I had a hard time sharing that song with people for a long time. I thought, oh, it's cheesy. It's over the top. People aren't going to like it. And, but you know, sure enough, after, you know, around a few campfires and stuff, I started kind of sharing. So every time I played that song, that was the one that people would be like, wow, what is that song? That's really great. And, so it's pretty exciting for me, tonight at, Le Cajubier. This will be the first time that I ever play that song in Montreal. So that's going to be a huge milestone for me. I feel like it's a real crown, I guess, on this journey that I've gone through. It's a beautiful ribbon on top to be able to now play that song in the city that I wrote it about. Now that music is such a big part of my life again, it's really cool.
I have to actually ask you about your affection for Montreal in the sense that, you know, I've been able to interview so many artists across this country, which is really special to me. Mm-hmm. But most of them, a lot of them have a great affection for Montreal. However, it just seems like, I think because of the, you know, the idea of that it's all French here, I think some people think, oh my God, I could never survive because I don't speak French, even though that's not the case. But, you know, right. I always feel like people always tend to either say they're going to Vancouver or they're going to Toronto, not to Montreal. So why did Montreal speak to you? Especially being from, you know, so far west.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I, at the time, I just thought it was obvious. I remember telling everybody when I was like, you're 20, 21, I'm like, I'm going to Montreal, man. That's where you go. That's where you get to play music. I think part of it, and when you think about that time in music, when you're going back to like the early 2000s, 2002, 2004, I mean, that was when, like, the Arcade Fire was coming out of Montreal and Patrick Watson and just these artists that, to me, were making some of the best music on the planet, not just in Canada. And it goes to show now that Arcade Fire is pretty much the biggest band in the world. You realize, oh, yeah, they were doing something special. It could also do with the fact that I think you picked up, like, my last name is Chalifour. My background actually is Quebecois. But that's never really been an active part of my life. My grandparents on my dad's side were both from Quebec, and both of their families moved to Edmonton, Saskatchewan when they were, I think they were children. So they were in the prairies during the Depression. And I think they sort of kept the language alive for that generation, but then pretty much it died after that. My father and none of his siblings speak French. And so for myself, that's always been a part of my heritage that I've wanted to recapture. And I took French in university, and I've always been able to kind of fumble my way through it and sort of be like semi-fluent. But I've got this kind of, it's on my bucket list to like be able to say that I'm bilingual or that I speak French, and I haven't really achieved it yet, but I sort of feel like maybe that's part of the appeal as well about why Montreal instead of Toronto, for example. Because Toronto was never that city for me. I never romanticized running away to Toronto. Toronto was just the big smoke.
Got it.
It was always Montreal. So,
well, I appreciate
more
it.
Romantic, you know, about Montreal.
Very much so. I've lived in both cities, and Toronto is definitely my second home, but yeah, there's something special about Montreal, that's for sure. Joining us mm-hmm. on the show is lead singer of Towers and Trees, Adrian Chalifour. Make sure to check out their website, towersandtreesmusic.com. So we got to talk about your latest single, Free. You know, tell us
sure.
about it, and what do you want people to take away from it, or is it open to sort of interpretation?
I mean, I think every song is open to interpretation, and if someone finds that a song speaks them in a certain way, then all the power to them. So Free is the first single off of our forthcoming album, which is called The West Coast, which is kind of funny because, of course, previously our best-known song is Montreal, which is very much out east. So our new album is quite dynamic. It's a bit of a journey. There are some kind of big moments, and there are some pretty intimate moments. And I would say that Free is very much on the big end of the scale. It's kind of the anthem of the album. For me, it's, basically it's a song about like looking past what's right in front of us, and kind of like finding the line on the horizon and going, I want to go to what's even further than that. And I believe that I can get there. And, so it's a song that's very much about kind of romance and adventure. It was the last song that I wrote while I was living somewhere that I didn't want to live, but I was very much fixated on where I was going next. And with that, of course, all the dreams that went with it, right? Playing music and whatever. And so that's where that line, you know, don't stop, no turning back, comes in. And what's great about it now is that it's really actually become quite an anthem, I think, even just for this group. You know, all of us are at a point now where we're putting more of our time and our energy and our resources into this music bucket than we are into any other bucket that we have going on in our lives. And that's kind of it can be a scary step, and it's a big step, but it's one that we all feel pretty good about doing right now. And so that whole mantra of like, don't stop, no turning back, it's kind of our own little motto within the group right now as well.
Now, from what I understand, you're on your first Cross Canada tour. What has it been like so far, sort of seeing, you know, all these towns as you, you know, cross the country? And have you noticed a difference in the audiences from, you know, province to province?
Yeah, we certainly have. I mean, so far we've played shows now in BC and Alberta and Saskatchewan. And then we did this big monster drive, 27-hour drive from Regina, Saskatchewan, to London, Ontario last night, and that's where we played last night. So we played our first show in Ontario last night. What have we learned so far? Well, one thing we've definitely learned with this tour and with the last one we've done is Alberta is a really great place to play music. That's one thing we're learning. Like, people come to the shows, and they pay quite a bit for the tickets to the shows, and then they buy all your merchandise, and they're like, they're really supportive, and they're really encouraging. So that's been pretty cool. So Alberta's actually like, if you're going to do a Cross Canada tour, Alberta's a great place to hit first, right? Because it's like, it puts a lot of wind in your sails. So that was really great. And then, I mean, we haven't had, what's also cool is we haven't had a bum show yet. Like, even like Regina was fantastic. And last night in London, Ontario was really great. Like, this is the first time. So we're touring with another artist, Mike Edel, who's also from Victoria. And Mike actually helped a lot with booking this tour. And so we played London, Ontario last night. It's the first time that either of us from Victoria, BC have ever been to London, Ontario. And we had pretty much a full room. We played this awesome little venue called the London Music Club. And there was like 60 people there. And that's pretty incredible, because I have a lot of friends who are indie musicians. And I've heard a lot of stories, and not a lot of those stories involve playing full rooms the first time you go through a town on the other side of the country. I hear a lot more stories about playing to one guy or two people or whatever. So this tour has been actually really, really encouraging so far. And I have to hold out hope that our show in Montreal tonight is going to be like extra special.
I'm sure it'll be extra special. We know how to party here in Montreal, so I'm sure
it'll be a good
show. Now, before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you, what are the main objectives for Towers and Trees over the next while? I know the album's obviously coming out, but do you mm-hmm. guys have like specific goals about, you know, where you want to be in like, 8 months to a year?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, like I said, I think right now our mantra is just don't stop, no turning back. We do, we're putting out this album. The album that we put out a few years ago, when we put that out, we were very much a Victoria band that had this passion project that seemed to have a little bit of a spark. And so we put this thing out, and then it got noticed kind of on a wider scale in BC. And we started, filling up rooms in BC, and we got into these big, contests, and we started getting on the radio. And that was pretty encouraging. And it was very affirming. It was like, wow, we can actually, our music is having impact. We could actually try and put a little more into this. So then when we made this new album, the first album was made in the living room. This new album was made in a studio working with a really great producer named Alex Alexakis. And it was, we just gave it so much attention and so much love and so much diligence. And it's like every song, it's like a song like Free. It's like, okay, well, this song is supposed to be really big, so let's try and make it as big as possible. Let's not put a ceiling on kind of how big we want to make this sound. And so I think now that we're ready, we're getting ready to share this album, I think we would love to see it reach a broader audience. And so one of the reasons that we're doing this tour, we're going to Canadian Music Week in Toronto, CMW, and we're showcasing there on Thursday, May 7th at the Cameron House. I think we're at a stage now as a group where we would actually welcome, building a team around us and connecting with industry. We've been totally self-managed, self-produced, self-everything to this point. And I think now that we have something that we really would love to share as broadly as possible, we would love to connect with people that can help us reach those audiences, whether they're labels or booking agents or management or whatever. So I think, our goal now for this next chapter is how can we take this little small business that we've built and turn it into something sustainable and something scalable so we can keep playing for more and more people.
That's awesome. Adrian, thank you so much for spending time with us on the show. And we wish you, of course, all the best of luck.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kelly.
That's lead singer, again, of Towers and Trees, Adrian Chalifour. Make sure to check out their website, towersandtreesmusic.com.
Hey, it's Adrian from Towers and Trees, and you're hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Silhouette. In the stillness, I will know that you are gone. dancing in the dark, soaking up the feel of being free. 'Cause we ain't free, but we could dance just like we are.
Find us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Click on KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Our next guest is indie folk artist Beth Moore, who has just released her sophomore album, 5 out of 10. Beth has been working and growing her music career since 2006 and has a unique sound to her voice, which definitely draws you into her beautiful folk melodies. Beth, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
So can you tell us how your musical journey sort of kicked off? Was it, you know, childhood plans that kept you going or started you off?
Not even close.
That's good.
Actually, like, I think music was the only art form I didn't get into as a child or a teenager. I started playing music on my 18th birthday, to be exact. My parents bought me this $100 starter guitar just for fun, I guess. And I don't know, I was sitting there staring at it one night, and there's just something inside of me that told me I was going to be a musician. And it was such a strong feeling that I went for it, and I played my first gig about 3 weeks later.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was one of those things, you know, kind of fire that burns inside of you that you know you'll never be able to ignore. Even though I felt completely unqualified, I was like, of all the things I've been doing my whole life, this was the one I hadn't. But I had been, I did write a lot of poetry, and I did graphic design really young. And I went to the university for advertising. So all of those things have really helped me be an independent artist. Mm-hmm. But playing music itself was definitely not in the game plan.
Wow, that's awesome. Because usually everyone tells me, oh, I started playing, you know, guitar or piano at 4, and then there they go. So that's really awesome that it started later in life. Can you tell us how you would actually describe your sound? And do you find that your sound is evolving as you grow as an artist?
Absolutely. I wouldn't know how to stop it from growing. And I try not to set out to make a certain type of sound with an album. Like, I didn't set out to make a folk record. I didn't set out to make a folk pop record. I wanted to write an album that was a little bit dancey, but also honest and truthful and kind of sad. It's hard to get too poppy with a focus on the lyrics, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So some people think it's a little too deep sometimes, but I can't help it. It's just the way that I write. And I don't know, I wrote about 60 songs for this album, and we chose the 10 that went well together. I think if we had chosen a different set of those 60, we would have a completely different record. We would have a really like cutesy folk record or a really sad acoustic album, depending on which of those 60 songs we decided to put together. But I'm really happy with the way it landed. I would say this album, this project, turned out to be very indie pop folk.
Actually, do you find, because I feel like sometimes there can be negative connotations when you say the word folk, or even when, you know, you're introduced as a singer-songwriter. Like, have you noticed that? Does it bother you? Because, like, I hate that it's almost like I feel like rock musicians are the only one that seem to have street cred, and everyone else is either making pop music, so they're viewed as fluff, or if it's folk, it's viewed as too deep. Like, does that ever annoy you, or you just sort of forge ahead regardless?
I've never really cared. The only time I've had trouble with calling myself a folk artist is in the presence of country singers.
Okay.
I've been yelled at by more than one. It's like, that's not folk. But really, genres, what genre titles mean changes based on culture. You know, Mumford & Sons is considered a folk band, but they're also a rock band. And I don't know, what does folk even mean anymore?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I think it's hard to even define, because I think so many people have so many influences that all the genres are kind of melded together anyways.
Yeah, I think you really just need to decide what you want to sound like and let other people put the labels on it, because they're going to, right?
Mm-hmm. This is true. Joining us on the show is recording artist Beth Moore. Check out her website, bethmooremusic.com. How long did it take you to write and record your latest album, 5 out of 10? Because you mentioned 60 songs, so was it like a couple of years? Were you able to bang it out in 6 months?
No.
Okay.
We started pre-production. It was a very slow process. mostly because I wanted to take my time with it and make sure, like, the producer, Kim, really pushed me. You know, I came in first day with 30 songs, and then he's like, okay, write 10 more. Okay, write 20 more. Okay, write 10 more. And of those first 30, I think 4 of them are actually on the album. But we spent about 1 year in pre-production and 1 year recording. And I think the recording, we could have gone a bit faster, but things like funding and waiting on stuff like that kind of held it up at times.
Can you explain the title of the new album and what it means to you and what you want, you know, your listeners to take from it?
You're actually the first interviewer that's asked me about the title of this album, which has surprised me.
Yes, I would have thought you would have got that right off the top.
No, I really expected, because originally we were going to call the album Get Low.
Mm-hmm.
And then last minute, I switched it because I knew this was a risky title, but it also made more sense to me. And I thought it described the album better and the themes in the album.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the reoccurring themes in this album is just coming of age and me navigating my way through my 20s.
Okay.
And I don't know, anyone who is in their 20s or has been can probably say they always feel like they're halfway, like they're scoring 5 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're never perfect on all fronts.
Right. This is true.
and learning to be okay with that balance of being halfway, of learning to live in the moment and learning to be okay with where today is at and the cards you've been dealt right now, and not always trying to have a perfect 10. Because I'm learning to be okay in the middle place. And
that's awesome.
That's what that album is kind of about. And I thought it was a funny title. Just self-deprecating enough.
Yeah, that's true. It's almost funny. Like, oh my God, I'm forgetting the name of the group, but when they had 1459, why am I forget? Sugar Ray, I think, was their sort of joke on their 15 minutes of fame, which I thought was pretty cool. So with, you mentioned the themes of the, or there is a theme. So would you say there's like a theme throughout, especially if you pick those 10 songs that fit the best together?
We didn't pick those songs based on the theme, but once we had compiled those 10, I did see that they all had a few things in common. I tend to, at that time when I was writing over that year, I think I was just thinking about a lot of things like navigating through my 20s, like I said, like very coming of age. But also, a lot of the album is about the end of the world.
Okay. That's a lot. That's good.
Like songs like The End of the World.
Very good.
And Get Low kind of touches on, the theme in Get Low is more humility, but nothing humbles you like the end of the world, right? Or realizing your humanity. And the reason it's about the end of the world is partly because I was writing some of it in 2012 when all of that end of the world talk was going down.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really believe it, but I think everybody probably had a thought, even if it was only for a second, of what if it does end? And then I got thinking, what would I change in my life if someone told me, like, the world is going to end or your life is going to end in, like, 3 years? You know, what would I change about my day-to-day life? And I think that was a really important question for me to ask, especially in my 20s at this point in my life, to be like, what is it I really want to accomplish? And the answer I came up with was, well, if someone told me I was going to die in, like, 3 years, I would write as many songs as I possibly can and record as many as I can, even if just demos, and then do good albums as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do. And it kind of put everything in perspective, and then it made daily decisions easy, because if they don't line up with those goals, then you don't have to do them.
Right.
And I like asking questions of people. I think it's important for us to ask questions of ourselves, and this album just asks you a lot of questions.
I think it's great that you did that, because I think you're making people think, and it's not just, I mean, I think it's great to have party songs and all that kind of stuff to sort of let loose and have a good time, but to ask questions and to make people think, I think it's important. I think it's how it pushes us forward as a human race. When you were in the process of doing the writing and the recording, is that where you like to hang your hat, or is it, you know, when the album's done and you get to do the promotion and the getting up on stage of it?
Well, there's definitely things I like about each aspect. Like, I'm very well suited to this career, as in I really love it. I love the marketing side of it. I love the advertising. I do a lot of my own graphic design work and stuff like that because I just enjoy it. I don't even mind writing grants.
Wow.
It's all kind of fun for me. I can't say I love being in the recording studio. I think it's something that's going to grow on me over the years. It's definitely the most challenging part of what I do. I love being free and writing songs, and the studio is very much, there's a microscope on everything you're doing. Like every wrong string hum is heard. Every time your voice goes off, it's recorded, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very humbling experience, but I grew so much. I grew more in that year of recording than I have playing 700 shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
But performing is my home. Like, that is where the payoff is. You know, when I get on stage, it's everything makes sense. All the hard work is worth it. Even if there's three people in the audience, as soon as I'm on stage, I'm home. And you know that that's the place you're supposed to be when it really doesn't matter what anyone says to you at that moment. Like, someone could throw something at my face and I still wouldn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is my house. Is what it feels like. When I was thinking, like, you're in my house. Like, I'm happy no matter what.
That's awesome. And it feels like definitely that you're in it for the long haul, because obviously this is a very lonely road, I would say, as a, you know, like an independent artist. And obviously, knowing the challenges, do you feel like you're going to go for broke no matter what? Like, this is it.
Yeah, I'm going to go for broke. I think I've passed broke a while ago. I've said that to people that are musicians and just getting started, and they'll ask my opinion, and I'll tell them, like, if there's absolutely any other thing you can see yourself doing, do it. Like,
mm-hmm.
If there's any backup plan in your mind forming, you're going to take it. If you have an exit route, you're probably going to go through it at some point, because it is hard, hard, hard.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no easy way. There's no shortcut. And it really, it's a grind, but I love it. And like I said, there's this fire inside that I don't think I could ever ignore. And I will do this until I die, for better or worse. And, you know, hopefully just enjoy it more and more throughout my life. And I have a song about me being 80, living simply on a farm, singing my songs.
Into the light, right now, I'm getting feet, you can't get out. Crowd of many and you're starting to drown. Hearts get lost when you sell them at cost. I don't know.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on the show this week. And as always, a big thank you going out to my guests, Sandy Duperval, Towers and Trees, and Beth Moore. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from country artist Willie Nelson. Once you replace negative thoughts with positive ones, you'll start having positive results. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media. We'd love for you to be one of our followers. On Twitter, at K Alexander Show. On Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show. On Instagram, at Kelly Alexander Show. And of course, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Have an excellent week. You and I will chat soon.